now calling Paul to join us in our phone conversation. Paul from the Voice of the Motors is going to be sharing with us some of the latest developments that are happening in Vietnam. Paul, good morning to you. It's great to have you with us on the show.
Hey, good morning. Also privileged to be here with you.
Oh, fantastic. Paul, talk to us a little bit. I heard that there are some big developments happening on Vietnam. Is everything of worry to our Christian brothers and sisters that are there? What's happening?
Well, it's been sad with the recent updates and the recent reports that we're receiving from our frontline workers. Because of the decree, the police or the officials, local officials, are using that to stop the gathering of Christians all over the villages. Of course, it's just not happening in the cities. Nothing happens in the cities. It's more on the villages, and it's more on the tribal areas.
That's really interesting that it's happening less in the cities and more in the country.
Yeah, you could have expected the other opposite way around.
Yeah,
right?
Why is that?
Well, the city has, like, because of growth and because of advancement, there's much of acceptance of everything. But of course, there's a control in the cities, and it's bad publicity if you put that in the news. Mm-hmm. Like if you're showing the world that we have freedom of religion, and all of a sudden you have these things happening, of course that would paint a bad picture. Sure. But with the villages, nobody knows.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that's right. It's happening under the table. But Paul, tell us. So the police then is enforcing the non-gathering of Christians in the remote, more remote farming areas of Vietnam, or is that what happening? So is Vietnam a country that at least outwardly profess to have religious tolerance, or that's not even very much in their discourse at all?
It's tricky because they have what we call a religion that is acceptable in the city, but provided that you submit a report where you write all your members, everyone that's registered, and then you abide of whatever rules that they have. But in the countries, in the villages, it's different because nobody's there, and so they're enforcing it. They're saying, we are the law, whatever we do, you follow. And they tend to find a Christian religion as American religion because of course, the previous conflict between the U.S. and Vietnam. So yeah, it's we see it as tricky. They're showing the world that we are free, but it's not actually free.
So yeah, wow. What's the effect that this is having on the people that you know in Vietnam? Are they getting discouraged, or are they finding ways around this? What are the believers actually doing?
This is the encouraging part. Let me just share one quick story. This is a recent story. This is a week before encouragement from us. There's someone who we support that has been passionate in preaching the gospel, that all of a sudden a lot of people are coming to Christ, that he even divided them in small churches, at least 100 of them.
Wow.
And then
amazing.
The authorities were so enraged and said, and pointed back to him and said, you are the ones spreading this news about this Jesus, and a lot of are following. And one gathering, while they were gathering, this was just last week report, one gathering, police and thugs came to that gathering and beat everyone. And this pastor that we're supporting was beaten badly, that he had an x-ray and a collarbone was fractured.
Wow. Wow. And it's interesting to say, like, the police plus thugs are coming. Usually the police are trying to fight the thugs. In this case, they're joining forces to go against the Christians.
They're actually using the thugs. They're the one, instead, they're enforcing and it's stopping the thugs from making nuances. But they're thinking that it's the Christians that are making the nuances in the villages.
So What is their justification? What motivates that? Are they afraid that the Christians are going to, you know, do some kind of political revolution? Do we know what's the main factor? Or is it because you said they think this is an American religion? Why do they hate the Christians there so much?
Yeah, just like any other communist country, they always want control. They want that everything can be controlled by them. So if you're following a different leader, which is the Lord Jesus Christ, and you would follow whatever Jesus would teach you, it would be so much against what they follow in communists. So, of course, they hate you because you're following a different Lord. You're following a different leader, where, in fact, you should follow our rules because you're under our country.
Yeah. Okay. Wow.
Is there – because I know in certain – you know, dictatorial communist countries around the world, they do have a kind of state religion that is promoted. Is it the case in Vietnam as well? And does that oppose Christianity? And is the thought there, hey, leave Christianity, you know, you can practice religion if you join our state religion. Is that kind of the scenario, or are they just completely anti-religion?
And no, they won't say they're anti-religion. They would say they're free, provided that you register and okay. write the names. And you're not allowed even to evangelize to people. Like in the cities, sure. You're only to do ministry in your own backyard. If you go out, then they can sue you. They can take you to the police.
Can you invite people to your backyard?
Yeah, to your home?
You can, but at the end of the day, they would interrogate that person. So what did they tell you? What did they do to you? And wow. all these things.
Yeah, and then if that – so what happens if a person, let's say – so what is the main religions in Vietnam? Are we talking – is it Buddhism or is it atheism? What's the current landscape there?
Yeah, most of them are Buddhist. Yeah, they follow that religion, and there's a mix of other religions as well.
So so let's say for instance here, we live in Vietnam. Lawson and I, we're missionaries there. We're inviting people over to our home, and we're sharing the gospel with them. You know, they're our friends. We're talking to them about how Jesus transformed our lives, how we have a hope in the future, how he makes us so happy for everything that he's done for us. And that person said, you know, I'm interested. I want to get to know more. I want you to, you know, read the Bible to me. And that person starts identifying as a Christian and wanting to be a follower of Jesus. What could in Vietnam potentially happen to both that Vietnamese person who comes from a Buddhist background and also for foreigners, for example, like Lawson and I, who are preaching the gospel, even within the confines of our own home? Are there any sanctions that may happen, or will they leave us in peace?
Yeah, there will be sanctions, especially if they would know. Of course, the first thing that will happen is they will interrogate the person that you shared with. If they know you as a missionary, of course, they expect that you've been doing missionary things. But then, once they know that you're sharing the gospel to other people, especially a Vietnamese local, the first would be interrogation. They would ask you a lot of these questions. And if they found out that you are really doing like proselyting or pulling people to believe your own religion, there will be sanctions and there will be charges, unknown charges sometimes, that you can imagine that they would charge you with. And with foreigners, you could be deported.
So you could be deported. And my question is this then. How can Christians share their faith in places like that? Is there any, because I'm also aware that in some countries, Paul, that we have big incidents of persecution, particularly against Christians. Sometimes governments send out people who pretend to be seekers, who pretend to be interested, just so they can become informants of what's happening, who's going there, what's being told, what's being shared. And I would imagine that this might, you know, happen in Vietnam as well. How do you find out who is legitimately seeking and who is there, you know, as a spy, so to speak?
That's a wonderful question. Yes, we know of actually a friend. They have a church there in the city. And yes, it's hard to really trust someone, especially when they say, oh, I want to know more, I want to seek more, because sometimes, yes, they're being sent to the government to spy around. What they do, they have protocols to follow. They first meet somewhere, and then they do not right away share everything. It's a matter of friendship evangelism. You make friends with them first, you grow the relationship, and then you talk more about it. And it really takes time just to make sure that that's not a spy from the government. And most of them, the true seekers of the Lord, they do it underground. They do it in a way so subtle that even people do not know that they're already seeking the Lord in their own end.
Yes, that's a very interesting thing. I remember once I have a friend from Saudi Arabia, and he was interested in knowing more about the Bible, but I wanted to just test him a little bit, and I said, okay, I'm more than happy to share with you about the Bible, but are you really going to be interested in following it if you believe it's true? Because in your country, you could be abandoned by your family, you could receive sanctions from your government, maybe you could even lose your life. Are you so hungry to get to know what truth is that you're not counting costs? And I think that kind of set him back a little bit, saying, I'm not sure if I'm that curious about the faith. But, you know, I think it made him think about, wow, why is that so interesting, so important, that there are people who are willing to lose their lives for that knowledge, of truth. So actually, that particular friend, even though he didn't want to study the Bible with me, I heard reports that he's actually interested and he's actually learning now that he's back in his country in an underground church. And this is just a follow-up for my segment, which is underground churches. Is that something that exists in Vietnam? Is that something that can happen? Or are churches usually normally, like, you know, open to the public? How does that work there? Do you know of any house churches or underground church networks that exist?
Yes, there are a lot. We always say there are three kinds of church in Vietnam: the registered church, the semi-registered church, where they register some and the others not, and the underground church, where the underground church is the one flourishing, because they're, for them, freedom in Christ is free to be able to experience the grace and the love of Jesus, and being able to free to tell people, I'm a believer and Jesus changed me to this person.
And tell me a little bit about that in Vietnam. Like, what are some of the precautions that the believers and the leaders of these underground churches need to have so that they can, you know, because, for example, we heard about, you know, places where they are, you know, they're changing locations of venue frequently, these kinds of things. They're not allowed, people are not allowed to bring electronics with them in case they can be trap wired. Is that the kinds of things that believers have to do in countries such as Vietnam as well, if they want to really stay under the radar?
Yes, they do change location every time. And sometimes they do parties in a way, just a front that they're already meeting. That's already fellowship. And in villages, they transfer from one house to another house, because it's more of a house church rather than a building. Because the moment that you put up a building, after it will be built, it will be automatically destroyed.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. Hey, look, I'm a big fan of house churches. Like, when I first came to Australia, I started with a house church. Lawson remembers that. He came to my house church. Remember, yeah. Lawson?
Back
so
in the day.
I'm a big believer. I have a special heart. And, you know, I praise the Lord for the believers that are in Vietnam, which is a country with so much religious persecution, that are continuing to do the Lord's work faithfully. So, Paul, we have about 30 seconds left, and I'm wondering if you know, how can people know more about that story? How can people contribute? And how can people get involved?
Yeah, we would love to for everyone to know more about that. So please visit our website. That's vom.com.au, or download our app. That's Voice of the Martyrs Australia. You could know more about it and pray for our persecuted brothers and sisters, and as well as to know more how to partner with us and see specific projects where we help, especially in Vietnam. And your partnership would be great if you would help these brothers and sisters that are in need. Of course, that they're doing the Great Commission wherever God is taking them.
Thank you very much, Paul from Voice of the Martyrs. We really appreciate your ministry. We're praying for you. We're praying for all of our beloved brothers and sisters that are preaching the gospel in persecuted countries. And we're looking forward to have you again with us next time, Paul. Have a great day. God bless you.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
This is the second hour of our show where we are going to get deeper into the Bible. We're going to read the messages that you, radio friend, wrote to us. And we are also going to start with a new quiz question. I have a correction to do in regards to a news comment that I made earlier as well, Lawson. Mm-hmm. So we have a fair bit of things to do. So let's get started with a quiz question. Producer Shell, please help us.
All right, I've put it up on the board there for you, too, so you can help me with the pronunciation of this first name. Is it Pethuel?
Mm-hmm. Pethuel.
Was the father of which Old Testament author?
Was the father
yeah.
of which? Oh, I know this. I know this name.
Pethuel. It's an unusual name.
Uh-huh.
Was the father of which Old Testament author? So wrote a book. And they must mention their dad in the book.
I'm just going to write out some authors here.
Yeah, today we're going to having some extra hard ones here. Hey, I think I'll have to get a guess. I've heard his name before. I cannot link it with being the father of anyone specifically.
So. Ooh, if I hadn't told you Old Testament, I would have given you the first letter. But there's not that many. In the Old Testament, that start with this letter, but quite a few in the New. I don't know if that's a clue or not.
Yes.
I have a clue.
Well, you haven't even shown me the answer.
Yeah, but this is my clue, and tell me if it's wrong. It has to be a minor prophet.
You are correct.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Right.
I know this name.
Number here is 0491-064669. We'd love for you to play along with us in our quiz game. See if you can show up these two guys here in the studio and get the answer in. 0491-064669. We're looking for one of the Old Testament authors who had a dad by the name of Pethuel.
Is it either of these? I've put three names that I think it could be. Just tell me if it's one of them.
You are correct. It's one of them.
Yeah, okay. Well, then I know who it is. If it was one of these,
yeah. Should I give it as a multiple choice? I could give those. Yes.
Yeah. I knew it. I haven't done that hard in my brain.
Yeah, I think that with all of these tips.
You got it correct as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my logic was his son's name would kind of rhyme with a father's name.
Oh.
Because there's a thing.
That's a thing in the Bible. Case, but yes.
Yeah.
So it does not rhyme with the dad's name of Pethuel.
Kind
of. Oh, I think it does rhyme.
It does end in the same letter. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it totally rhymes. It's kind of like in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, you know, how they have like
Faramir and Boromir.
Gimli, Faramir, Boromir, Gimli, son of Gloin, son of I don't know what. I don't know. I never read the books, but I remember that. I heard that their names that, you know, were matchy-matchy.
Hey, if you guys know the answer, 0491-064-669. Again, it's 0491-064-669.
And I'm also curious about one thing, Lawson, that I want to ask you, my radio friend. Does your family have, like, matching names?
Oh.
Like, all siblings start with the same letter or have the same ending? Or, you know, is there any sort of a theme happening in the names, maybe of you, maybe someone that you know?
So,
what about in your house, Lawson? Everybody started with an L?
So, I am one of four. I have three sisters. And there's kind of that trend going on in our family. But it's that the suffixes of the names kind of rhyme. It's Haley, Maddie, Shelby. So, they all end in an E sound. Now, Maddie, yeah, Maddie is short for Madeline, but it was kind of, I think it was intentional from my parents that, like, her name would be Madeline, but be shortened to Maddie.
In my house, it's not intentional.
Yeah.
But we the nicknames of our kids are Tata, Tonton. So they kind of
that's cute.
Rhyme. I mean, yeah. they match a little bit. What about you, Shell? Do you have any sort of a themes in your household or maybe grandkids?
Not in our household. I've got a lot of relatives that have done themes. I've got one, my cousin who has recently passed away. Her four kids are all names of cities in America.
That's cool.
Oh, so
what are the cities?
Okay.
Austin, Phoenix, Madison, and Dallas.
Dude.
That is so cool.
That's awesome. Oh, yeah.
That's so awesome.
Tell me what you think of this. I was obsessed with this idea for some reason when I was like 15 or something. I thought the name Baltimore was just like the coolest thing ever. And I'm like, if I have a kid, I'm going to name them Baltimore. Because then their nickname would be Bolt. And their full name would be Baltimore. I'm like, that's awesome. Very cool.
I once met two sisters. One was named Island. The other one was named Forest.
Okay.
That's where were they from?
In Brazil.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I had another family, my friends and their kids, they had beautiful names as well. Genesis and Heaven. It's like the beginning. Yeah. And I love that word.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I want to know, do you have themes?
I know, like, for a lot of African kids, they have names like
their virtues.
Yeah,
I love people that have names of virtues like faith, promise,
precious, hopeful.
I had a friend who started with a single syllable name, and so then they went to a two syllable name for the second. And I thought, oh, we'll carry that on. So they had four kids, and each time they had an extra syllable.
That's epic.
Their fourth child was Elizabeth.
Okay, so.
Oh, no, is that three or is that four?
Oh, so the first one is just one syllable, yeah, like Max.
Uh huh.
Then the second one, two syllables, like Jason. Lena.
Uh huh.
And then the third one, three, Eliza. And then the fourth one, Elizabeth.
Uh huh.
That's cool. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Did you know that Elizabeth is actually a Hebrew name?
Really?
Yeah.
Is it in the Bible?
Yeah.
What?
Well,
the biblical version of it is a bit different. The Elizabeth is just a Greek translation.
Yeah.
But the actual name is Elisheva.
Elisheva.
Yeah, or
so
Elisheva.
John the Baptist's mom, yeah. Right? But, yeah, so are we reading her name in – so is it in the English version?
Yeah, that's right. That's the English version, but it's Elisheva. And the meaning of that is my God is devoted to God or pledged to God.
Mm.
Devoted to God. It's a very beautiful name.
Absolutely.
All right. Stop about names. You know, it's one of my passions,
ooh,
one of my
Tracy
hobbies.
Tracy just texted in about it.
Okay. That's right.
My daughter and her husband's name starts with A, and they have named my three grandchildren starting with Z.
Oh, that's so cool. That is so cool. And that's I love kids with names that start with Z. The only thing that I feel a little bit for them is that in school and university roll calls, they're probably going to be the last ones. But that actually can be a good thing.
Well, actually, usually in Australia, it's by last.
You can arrive a little bit later to class.
It's by last name, usually, in Australia. So I would always, because my last name's Walters. So
okay,
in
Brazil is their first name. Yeah, that's really cool.
I'd be the last one to, like, get vaccinated at the school, like, vaccine thing or whatever like that. And then what I really liked is that if it was something good, the teachers would feel bad for the people with the last names. And they're like, you know what? We'll go last names, you know, like the last names first this time. But I feel like that happened a disproportionate amount of times because they felt bad for us. So we just got the best of all of it, I feel like.
Oh, how good is that? Look, I was just in the middle of the pack, so it doesn't matter what was the method.
Scaff is kind of
no, Scaff, cool. But usually in Brazil they do with the first name. Joseph. So like, I'm in J.
Yeah, right.
So it doesn't really matter.
Middle,
yeah.
That's awesome. Hey, we got a few more text messages as well as I pull them up here. Chris said, if I wake up, I read the Bible or Ellen White on my phone app, and before I know it, I'm asleep.
Yes, and then for my radio friends that do not know who Ellen White is, she's an author that wrote extensively about the Bible. Some of her books are incredibly beautiful, absolutely
totally worth it. Published female
author. I think it's the best biblical author talking about Bible stuff outside of the Bible.
Yeah.
She's number one, in my opinion, number one.
Number one.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Very good, Chris. I think that's a great, great tip. What else do we have, Lawson?
This from Wayne. He said, okay. Good morning. If you are breathing, that is a talent. You are displaying God's glorious work.
That's right. We undermine sometimes, you know, particularly in a super rushed world. Let's say that you think you're a person of just ordinary talent, of no talent, however you want to say it. Well, do you have a heart just to come up and spend time with people and be a friend? Mm. Like, this is a real talent, and I think it's a commodity that it's in real short supply. So Look, if you don't think you have any talent, let us know. Write me the hashtag no talent. Lawson and I are going to talk to you, and we're going to find out the talent.
Sit you down and find your talent.
We're going to find it. I am so sure.
We're going to pull them out of you.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to be able to
I'm so sure you have a talent. Yeah. Nobody has zero talents, according to the Bible. So
absolutely. 0491-064-669.
That's right. We have some people requesting the book. We have What Do You Think We're Giving Out. It's a fantastic book. It's one of these really modern books with the keyword codes. Cute. In the pages that direct people to videos. So, Lawson, for example, where did you come from and how did you get here? And are there things that you believe in and unseen things beyond proof that you know without a doubt to be true? Like, can that even exist? It's talking the big questions of life. So if you're exploring, if you are at that stage of life at the moment that you're really asking questions, the hard questions, this book is going to take you on a journey. The chapters are short. They're interesting. There are QR codes with videos to go with it. So do like Simon and text us with a hashtag think. And we haven't done a mode of transportation today, Lawson. Mm-hmm. We need a new mode of transportation. How could we potentially deliver this book in case we don't find a suitable courier or transport mode?
I got it. Heelys.
Heelys, like helicopter?
No. Heelys. Do you know what Heelys are?
They're like women's shoes.
The shoes with the high heels. No, have a little roll at the back.
Yeah, they're the shoes that have the little wheel in them.
Yes,
dude, that everyone wanted as a kid. And
I never had one, but like, man, that thing,
dude,
looked rad.
Neither, and it was always like, I feel like everyone's shared experience with Heelys is like, some kids had them in our school and we wanted them so bad, and our parents wouldn't get them.
They're rare.
Yeah, we like our school had kids wearing Heelys, like literally. Coming off the bus and then just like,
okay. Look, I'm pretty sure that these Heelys would be gone in the first mile.
Nah.
You know, the paved road.
They're
designed to, you know, walk in shopping centers and really flat grounds.
Yeah. I reckon not the first mile.
Unless you had like more rugged ones in Australia.
First kilometer. I think give them at least like 100.
Nah.
100 kilometers. No, dead set.
Well, if you want to see Lawson, you know, ride into her home on Heelys.
Yeah.
In case we don't find any suitable courier, we, you know, just text
across
the word hashtag
the Nullarbor in my Heelys. Dude, we could get some like suspension, like full drive Heelys or something that, you know, have tread on the tires.
Yeah, we could make like a turbojet Heelys, like attach like a turbojet engines in this behind them.
Oh.
And you turn them on and just like.
We could get a fire extinguisher and put it like out the back.
Oh, fire extinguisher. Then, like, yes.
That would be another cool mode of transportation. I might be blowing this like early. We could have done this on Monday, but like doing an office chair with a fire extinguisher. Yeah. That would be
that'd be really cool.
Pushing yourself along.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we'll find a way to get this book to you. Yeah. Do not worry. So far we've never had any undelivered book in our history. I don't think we have, so we want to. Well, not in my watch.
Not under my watch.
No, yeah. We're going to make sure that you receive this book. And if there's ever a book that you have never received, and there has been a long, long time, text me in, and I can follow up it for you. Okay, 0491-064-669. We'll come back with more. There's more texts that we want to answer, and there's a correction that I want to make as well, very shortly.
You're listening to The Breakfast Show. Connect with us on 0491 064 669.
So, Scaffy, what did you say?
Okay.
What did you say wrong? I want to say, but let's
yeah, I'll apologize, but let's read first. There's a couple other messages, Lawson.
Okay.
One of them is by Simon. Simon said this. Hey, do you think that if our nation kept the Sabbath and held a plant-based diet, the health of the nation would be better off? And the answer to that question is absolutely yes. So, oh, yes, absolutely. The only thing is that you cannot impose these things. People have to come to them freely out of their own choice. But if they did, I think that the Sabbath is optimally conducive to optimal health, mental health, physical health, and plant-based diet as well. And he said, hey, because the government have just committed millions to more hospitals. If we all kept the Sabbath, the health of the nation would change. Yeah. I absolutely agree with you, Simon. And while I think that investing in hospitals is very important, hospitals are usually treating the end of the line, the symptoms. I think that more investments would need to be given to making people healthier first.
Dude, not just millions, hey, but billions of dollars. We're seeing at the moment an expansion of hospitals,
right,
John Hunter here in Newcastle. And so they're building that up, but then they're building freeways around the John Hunter so it's easier to get through the city to get to the hospital.
That's right. I think that a nation should have a metric in saying, you know, that instead of claiming, because you know what? Oh, we built so many hospitals and we had so many beds and we have more and more. We are seeing more and more people every year in our hospitals. I don't think we should be celebrating that. I think we should be celebrating and say, hey, you know what? We're closing down some hospitals because nobody's sick here.
Wow.
You know, that's how I think should be our aim, you know, to have the minimum amount necessary because people are just, you know, healthy, living their best lives. Listening to Faith FM is also one of these ways you can get healthier because Lawson and I will certainly, you know, bring you up on the health train and Chell, the producer. We are all passionate about that. So, yes, Simon, thanks for that. We all, speaking about health, Sky, she said, hey, about your conversation about cheese. Remember that one, Lawson?
Yeah, I remember.
Talking about cheese yesterday.
Yeah.
She said, hey, cheese is a luxury at my place with the cost. And never mind, you start eating it without realizing. So I had to stop buying the block cheese.
Dude, block of cheese is dangerous.
Why is dangerous, man?
Because, man, you just...
The small ones are the big ones.
It gets to the point where, like, the knife... Like, I don't eat cheese. I haven't eaten cheese for years. But, like, back in the day, it gets to the point where the cheese knife just sits in the fridge with the block of cheese, right? Like, you're cutting it... like, you open the fridge and you've got the knife in there cutting off a slice.
Oh, I didn't know that there was a thing.
Dude, it's massively a thing.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, look. Yeah, cheese is addictive. So good on you, Sky, because too much cheese wouldn't be good for you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But a little bit of cheese,
yeah,
it's all right.
If
you can,
Scaffy's personal opinion.
My personal opinion here. It's a little bit fresh cheese. Don't give me the blue cheese and these cheeses that you know.
One of my favorite authors, who I think we were just mentioning before, Ellen White, says it's not fit. To touch the lips.
Yeah, but she said...
Yes!
Oh, okay. Let's talk about that. I researched about it, okay? Because I said, Ellen, please, you're not saying it. I'll tell you that story. A lot of people think that because they take that to portray Ellen White almost as a no-cheese extremist. And this is the interesting thing about that quote. She said that quote. And then Seventh-day Adventists in Germany read that. And they wrote back to her and says, Ellen, this is crazy because like cheese is like the basis of our diet. Like, well, what should we do? And she said, no. I was not talking about fresh cheese, like your ricotta, your fresh cheese. She's like, I'm talking about the strong, stingy, moldy, old cheese. This is unfit from consumption. Never talked about fresh cheese.
She's cleared it out. Give me the quote.
Oh, you want the quote? Yeah. Sure, you can. Yeah, I'll give you the quote.
Send me the quote.
Absolutely. Lawson is playing the skeptical card on the producer.
We'll okay.
Yeah.
Scaffy can say a lot of things, but, you know, prove it.
Okay.
No, not that I don't trust you.
All right.
You're the man, but.
Okay.
Hey.
Yeah, no, I think that it's a valid thing. It's like your cottage cheeses and.
Yeah, it's fresh cheese, your mozzarella's, and you're not talking about the. She's talking about the. But. Another thing as well. Remember this, everyone.
And it's gotten worse over time.
Worse over time. And remember this. Ellen White was a Victorian era writer. Uh-huh. She wrote things in a time that there was no thing such as a fridge, for example. So either the cheese was fresh, really fresh, or it was really, really old and had to stand on its own based on the microbial attitude there. So just bear in mind that there is this thing as well, which in terms of how you have to take the context into account.
Good point.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Let's go into the next one.
Okay. Well, we've got here. I've loved this from Sky as well. She wrote it. She's suggesting some more forms of transport. She's got here pigeon formation racing as like a transport. So, like a formation of pigeons to.
Like we attach ourselves with strings to the pigeons and they fly us to places.
I don't know.
Just the mail.
Just the mail. Oh, yeah. The mail will be fine.
Yeah.
Did you know that during World War II, before they had LIDARs and radars, they actually used pigeons to guide missiles into hitting ships?
That's crazy. Really?
Yeah, they trained the pigeons by placing them in like in a box, and they have like a little picture of a ship, and if the pigeon packed into the ship and it would move around, they get food.
Whoa.
So when they come with the missiles had a pigeon inside and there's a little camera and they're, you know, pecking with the, with their beaks, the sheep. And that would just correct the route of the missile. So it always knew when to hit the target. It's like actually one of the best.
So pigeons are flying the missile.
Yeah. They're controlling, they're totally controlling the missile. You never knew this? You didn't know that story? Come on, this is one of the most crazy World War II technologies ever.
Dude, that is hectic as.
But you have to, admit it's good intelligent design.
Dude, if we train the pigeons too well, like, they'll take over. They'll fly all the bombs into us. Like,
man, they're smart.
Dude, if
they're smart creatures.
Like, mutually assured destruction or whatever, it's like, you know, they hit the buttons and then the pigeons could save us. They would like get in the bombs and maybe fly them up into space or something. You know, they'd redirect them.
I think you're getting a little bit too much there, but maybe love the transportation.
Another mode of transportation. Yeah, I love
helium balloons tied around the wrist. I think we used that one already, Lawson.
That's so good. And then cannon for items.
Oh, cannons. Yeah. So but then only like if you're nearby, say about 12 kilometers range.
Yeah.
Maybe the best one's 24.
What about an intercontinental ballistic missile to take the stuff over?
I was going to say a little bit less, like the ATACMS, you know, missiles that have like 300 kilometer range.
Sure, sure.
That one gives a bit of range, but Lawson's going to the next level.
Intercontinental.
Yeah. All right, Lawson, I think we are deviating from the topic a little bit. Let's go back here to reality here. Earth calling Lawson and Scaffy.
Uh-huh, sure.
So what I want to say is that... talking about, I said that Donald Trump said that he was going to turn over Gaza to Israel, but it was the other way around. So Trump said that Gaza will be turned over to the U.S. by Israel after the war, so that they could do their Riviera of the Middle East thing. But he's receiving a lot of flack. They're walking backwards apparently on that plan. Let's see what happens. Apparently, nobody's very excited with this one other than himself and Benjamin Netanyahu. Apparently the Arab nations are saying, we're not doing it. Just forget about it. So let's see what's going to happen there. Very good, Lawson. Let's get into the Bible. I want you to open up in Matthew 5, 43 to 48.
All right, Matthew 5, 43 to 48. I'm just pulling that one up now. Where the Bible reads as such, it says here, "You have heard it said, you love your neighbor and you hate your enemy."
Yeah, that's common sense, right? Yeah. Love your neighbor, hate your enemy.
Yep.
So far, so good.
"But I say to you, love your enemies."
What?
"Bless those who curse you. Do good to those who hate you. And pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven, that he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so? Therefore, you shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect."
Okay. Wow. Okay, wow. That's a mouthful here, and our topic is about God's love and understanding God's love. And he's saying here that God's love is very different from our, let's say, default love. Our default love is you love those who can love you back. You love those who are nice to you. And you hate or you have contempt for those who hate you. That's the standard, yeah, from the factory. Jesus is saying here, this is not how God does it.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
It's now time for a new quiz question and also the answer to the previous one. So, Shel, what do you have for us?
Answer to number three was Joel. So Joel.
Joel, son of Pethuel.
Mm-hmm.
It does kind of rhyme a little bit.
It's rhyme, yeah.
It's just the all last finishes with sound. L.
Yeah.
That's usually what rhyming is.
Not just the last sound. It's usually...
Oh, the last sound is fine.
No, it's usually... It's usually.
Oh, that rhymed. The last sound is fine for rhyme.
So, like,
no,
that,
no, it was
that,
not a perfect rhyme, though. It's,
for, in that specific example, right, is like it's only one syllable, so you could say the entire word rhymes. But really, what you're looking for is having the last sound rhyming yeah, is like the kind of bottom level of like mm-hmm. that rhyme.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So, what's the next quiz question? Let's see if it's going to rhyme.
This
as
one
well.
Is a multiple choice. We'll see how you go without the choices first. Okay. According to the Apostle Paul, how should you speak to an elder man?
Oh,
I know this one.
Okay, they're already writing down, so I might not have to give them the multiple choices, but the number here is 0491-064-669. Scaffy has it correct. 0491-064-669 for you to send in your answer. And Lawson was really confident. Now yes, he's second
his
guessing
face
himself.
Is amazing. I wish you were here, radio friend, just to see like Lawson.
Would
you
like the options? Or are you going to? Well, yeah, that's kind of an obvious, but it's not the right answer. I'll give
that's
you the multiple.
Right.
I'll give you the multiple.
Lawson,
choice.
Just like with your mouth, like
no,
respectfully.
Yeah, with your mouth, respectfully. Yes. Pretty much exactly what he wrote. No. All right.
So according what are the answers, the multiple choice.
According to the Apostle Paul, how should you speak to an elder man? Is it A, harshly? B, politely, C, with rebuke, or D, like a father. And if you want, you can find the answer in 1 Timothy 5. Lawson has it correct.
Hey, good on you, Lawson. Yeah. Good on
it was,
you,
it was floating around there, but hey, we got it in the end. Yeah. 0491-064-669, you're listening to The Breakfast Show.
Very good.
And Martin texted in a YouTube clip with that story about the pigeons that you were talking about.
The homing
I watched it. It
was pigeon
cool.
missiles. Yeah. That's awesome.
If anybody else wants it, let us know.
We
we'll
need
send
to train pigeons to fly drones. Then we can like outsource the flying of drones to pigeons.
Yeah. I'm afraid that the drones are going to be flying themselves artificial intelligence. Now, I don't know if you're following the latest development on drones. They're using now what they call... optic fiber drones.
Sure.
So they have like a big reel with kilometers long with optic fiber, and that makes them immune to electronic jamming and these kinds of things. So drones actually they got back to wired stuff.
So the drone is
the drone
connected
flies,
to
but it has a wire.
Cable.
Yeah, connected to a cable, which is connected to a power source where it can transmit information and all these kinds of things, and it can fly for dozens of kilometers. But
what if the cable catches on a tree?
Well, bad luck, I think. It's, just try to get your drone back. That's what they're doing now. Mm-hmm. Okay, Lawson. So let's get back into your Bible study. We're talking about Matthew 5:41 and onwards. And so we're thinking that the default method of humanity is just love those who love you back. Love those who you like, who are likable, and hate your enemies. And God is saying, no, actually, love your enemies. Pray for those who are persecuting you so that you may be the sons of your Father in heaven. Because, and this is the thing as well, okay, a few things. So how do you expect me to love my enemy? Love here is not the phileo love. It's the agape love. We spoke about that earlier in this series. It's a love of doing the right thing by. Not not necessarily having positive, fuzzy feelings for.
Yeah.
Agape love is independent of feelings. It's a love that is that it's moved by principle.
So would you say giving someone consequences for their actions is a loving thing to do? Would that be Would that be agape love?
It might be, depending on the circumstance.
Like, would disciplining your children be agape love?
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think so.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. So do not respond evil with evil, but evil with good. Do not retaliate with violence, these kinds of things, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven, because he causes his sun to rise, and the sun, S-U-N, to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. So God treats everyone fairly.
Sure.
Okay? Jesus says, because if you love those who love you, like, what reward do you have? What is the great thing you're doing? Do not even the tax collectors do the same. So there's no merit in that. That's kind of the basic. And it's sad to say, but I think that we are almost coming, you know, sometimes we hear stories that people are not even loving those who they are supposed to love. I'm talking about, you know, in the context of families, parents, and spouses. You're not even loving who you're supposed to love, which reminds me of another Bible verse where the Apostle Paul says, Jesus says that love will grow cold among many.
Yeah, wow.
And I think that this was one of the symptoms of love growing
which
cold.
Which is just such a, like, a reflection of selfishness, selfishness in the heart. I don't know, I'm, like, in a season right now, like, I'm getting married soon, and so I'm just all like, I feel lovey-dovey, but then in terms of, I think I'm living up to, and my...
Let me tell you, Lawson, like, there will be times, many times, that, you know, you will have to love your wife based on principle, not necessarily because you're feeling it.
Burst my bubble.
There will be times.
I would say right now, I'm, like, not just living up to, like, having these feelings, but, you know, my fiance could attest that times when she's in need and she needs help and I'm there for her and I'm helping her and she's like, oh, Lawson, you're so amazing.
Yeah, there will be lots of times that you won't feel like doing that.
But this comes, like, naturally. You have to choose. This comes naturally out of the good feelings that I have for her, but also out of the principal decision that I made. But yeah, this principle of love, doing the best by people despite how you feel about them, yeah, it truly, this is the truest sense of love, because there can be no selfishness in it, because there's nothing that you can get out of it. Personally, at least, like, there's no selfish gratification that can come from loving your enemies. The only thing that you can hope happens from loving your enemies is that they feel the love of God and they experience the love of God and that they would be saved. But in terms of any, like, selfish gain, like, there's just nothing to come from.
Not only that, but Jesus could have said, hey, he could stop at don't retaliate towards your enemies.
Sure.
Just don't do nothing. Don't respond back. Which is already good, but he's saying, no, actually do something good for them.
Wow.
Because this is what God is doing all the time. And it says here, if you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? So therefore, Jesus says, you are to be perfect as your Heavenly Father is perfect. And let me just say here, Lawson, this is a passage that I love, particularly because it's so poorly understood.
Wow.
This idea of therefore be perfect as your Heavenly Father is perfect. And this is the reason. When we take the word perfect, we think about sinless, perfect in the Greek sense, with no flaws. And some people either say, look, this is impossible. I cannot be perfect. I tried. It's just too much of a high standard. Others say, no, I'm perfect. And they're thinking they're perfect. They're leading themselves to believe they're perfect in the sense that they've never done any mistakes. I actually spoke once to a man and he said, look, I think it has been more than 10 years since I have apologized to anyone because I'm perfect. And I'm looking and saying, oh, okay. And only interacting with him in for 30 minutes, I could tell that man did not have the perfume of Christ.
Wow.
Even though he is a believer, he does things for the church and all these kinds of things, you can tell the arrogance that needed to take place and the pride just so that he can. So basically his mode was, and whenever he did anything, he was never wrong.
Wow.
So he didn't need to apologize. So never that he would ever do or say was ever, ever, ever wrong.
That's
but is, this is not what is this is not what Jesus is saying here.
Yeah.
Let's have a quick look and study about that verse here. Therefore, you are to be perfect. The word that Jesus is using here, or Matthew is using here, is teleos. Teleos can mean perfect, like mature, complete, finished in that sense. So it's mature. So be mature in love. Be complete in love, just as your Father in heaven is. In what sense? Well, because your Father loves both the just and the unjust.
Yeah.
It's in that context. When Luke, for example, is writing about the same topic, Lawson, the same Sermon of the Mount, Luke says there, he says the same thing, you know, God sends the sun to rise on the evil and the good. He sends the rain, the righteous and evil. Therefore, be merciful as your Father in heaven is merciful.
Mm.
Matthew is writing to a mostly Jewish audience. Luke is writing to mostly Greek audience. So he's making sure that he's using words that they will understand. So Luke and Matthew are equating the perfection here to an attitude of mercy. Not to a point where you're not going to make any mistakes, or and if you do, you cannot say that you're sorry for it and you cannot humble yourself. So the love of God is that love that you're doing the right thing by others irrespective of who they are and irrespective of what they have done back to deserve it or not to deserve it.
Wow. Oh, that's powerful. That's powerful. I mean,
that's quite the standard, isn't it?
It is an incredibly high standard for many. Because, you know, whether you're in the workplace, with family and whatever it may be, there is a lot to create barriers and boundaries over. There are a lot of grudges that you can hold, and we see it all the time. But what's powerful, what Jesus is sharing here is a new way. You don't have to be like that. You don't have to do that. I can give you something better. I can give you true peace. I can give you true love. Man, like, life would be so much better off if I could just love all of my enemies. If I didn't have to give mental energy to pain or sadness or whatever it may be.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
Coming to the end of our program, but we still have a few things that we want to say with you. So, Shel, what was the answer? So how should we treat the elderly?
Like a father.
Like a father. Mm. And elderly women as mothers, and younger as sisters and as brothers
and sisters. Yeah.
I find it very nice. Because it says, look, Paul said, do not rebuke sharply an elder, but entreat and talk to him as a father.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of wisdom. So be tactful. Dude. Say what you need to say, but be tactful.
I love in kind of church land, like when you're in a church and people call each other brother and sister. It's like something that I kind of came into. I'd never experienced until I was a Christian. And especially amongst kind of more, it's something that we do here in Australia, but particularly amongst more ethnic groups. When I hang out with my African friends, and it's brother and it's sister, and it's I love it. You feel like a family. Yeah. Like from all over the world, it can be from all different places, and you're this family of brothers and sisters of people who love each other, who go out of the way for each other.
Awesome. In Brazil, we use that a lot as an endearing term,
brother.
Yeah, even if you're not in a church or if you don't know the person, but if you know them, say, hey, brother, can you please hand that over to me? And I think that in Australia that's used as well. Not maybe as much, but...
Well, we say, like, bro and whatnot. There's not a huge sincerity about it. We use mate. I think our
main
term of endearment here. I love it how, like, at times that I've been to, like, places like Southeast Asia and whatnot, where everyone calls each other boss. Like that's so
really?
Good.
It's, oh yeah, that's so interesting.
I went to the tip recently, and there was like a Indonesian guy working there, and I'm just sitting there in the line waiting, and he was, you know, chatting with me through the window. And I'm like, boss, which trace your activity. Really, he's like, cool. Hey, go this way. It just like all of a sudden, like this guy, like face just like lights up, you know. That when I was in the Philippines, we were all just like, oh, boss. It's like,
yeah, that's really cool. So good. Yeah. I love that one.
Yeah.
So Lawson, how can people experience the reality of being called brother and sister this weekend? Do you have any idea?
Oh, right. Come to my church. Go to Scaffy's church. Go to our church.
If you want to come to the Family Connection Church in Cardiff, just, you know, you're more than welcome. If you want to go to Lawson's church.
Yep.
If you're going to go to any church around you, any Seventh-day Adventist church, look, it is paramount. Paramount. If you want to grow in your faith, that you surround yourself with healthy, and I'm talking about spiritually healthy, safe, Bible-immersed people. And you can find them in the nearest Adventist church next to you.
Mm.
So go try to find out where it is and go there. Say that you're friends with Scaffy and Lawson and you're trying it out. You really want to experience what it is like to be in a community of believers. And I believe that you will be blessed.
You'll be incredibly blessed.
You'll be incredibly blessed. And again, if you're around, just come to my church or Lawson's church or Shell's church as well.
Yeah.
In Raymond Terrace.
Wait, we're having burritos for lunch. If you like Mexican food, come and hang out with us. Ooh. Eat some burritos.
We're having burgers.
Oh, burgers, yum, dude.
We're having pizza.
Oh, dude, this is like a trifecta of
but that's going to be
food.
For all of my church friends after it. We have a pizza oven in the backyard.
That's epic.
And my wife and I are going to be, you know, cooking pizza.
Cooking up
for
some
everyone.
Pizza.
So there you go. If you come up on the Sabbath, you might end up even, you know, being blessed with a piece of freshly made pizza.
Bro, I remember... I would say it's one of the first times I went to church, quote unquote, and it was Scaffy's place. Went over there for a Bible study because our mutual friend Moses, he texted me. He's like, bro, there's going to be food here. And I was like really hungover. I was drinking at this time. Don't drink now. I haven't been sober for 8 years. And I remember seeing that and being like, dude, I need to get over there. And I had some Fanta. I think you guys made, Camilla made pasta.
Yeah.
And dude.
Well, my wife can cook.
It
man.
Was the bomb.
She can cook.
I needed sustenance.
I learned to
at
cook
the time.
As well because when she got pregnant, and she couldn't go anywhere near the kitchen.
Yeah.
The smells were just too strong
too much,
for her.
Yeah.
So I started with a cheese toasties, and lo and behold, now I cook pretty much every day. I love cooking.
That's
now.
Awesome.
Yeah. I came from a denial in the kitchen to like an enthusiast amateur cook. Now.
Ah, that's awesome. Guys.
Things that marriage do to you, you know? Make you better.
Absolutely.
Very good. So we are looking forward to see you in a church this weekend and on Monday. Talk faith, live faith, and act faith.
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.